Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy. It is still August, which means that we are still talking about recruiting, and today we are doing so with Holy Cross head coach JL Reppert. And Coach Reppert, I'm really excited for this conversation for a variety of reasons, but one of them is because, as I told you before I pressed record, Holy Cross, one of four places that I applied to coming out of high school, so this one's a little personal for me, and I was not good enough to play lacrosse at Holy Cross in 2003, but I am interested in what the recruiting process would have been like had I been better. So thanks so much for taking the time. How you doing?
Great, Terry. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
So we always start these conversations in the same way, and it's with asking how you describe yourself as an evaluator.
Yeah, it's funny. I've listened to a lot of these throughout the years, and really appreciate the perspective you bring on it. And you know, I think I might answer a lot similar to other coaches, and maybe a few other differences. I think for me, I think of myself as being thorough and consistent. And, you know, I try to bring some analytics, but there's also some just general qualitative view on everything that comes into play. And I think the last two things are I'm a little bit of a loner and I'm a learner. And I say that because there are some coaches that are my colleagues that can watch a game and talk and have a conversation and see all those things. It's hard for me to do that. So, and I try not to be biased by other people's opinions and views in this whole process. So, try to kind of do it my own way. And I think we're always trying to evolve and get better. And whether it's your podcast on how recruiting works or various other podcasts, colleagues, just trying to always learn and find ways to get better.
That actually raises a good question. One of the things that I think is a dead zone for sports media in general is how coaches improve. We talk and read and listen and watch all the time how athletes, how players improve, but we spend so much less time thinking and talking about how coaches improve. You just hinted at it. How do you describe the way you've evolved as an evaluator? Basically, if you can think back to 15 years ago, how different are you now? What were the things that you prioritized or cared about then that you don't care about now? And what have you replaced them with?
I think a lot of it is just different, you know, techniques, strategies. You build an experience level similar to an athlete playing of just knowing what works, what doesn't, and you've seen more things. We have tried to be a lot more, bring some, I don't know, I guess maybe some science or some analytics to the process a little bit. I just feel like I have a more bigger depth of knowledge on who to compare guys to or how to talk through those things. You know, and I think I've evolved in, being able to separate, getting it, feedback from high school or club coaches on their players, but not letting that influence me when I'm watching a kid on the field, and using all of that information to build our list, but not letting one influence the other too much.
You mentioned comparisons, and I've always found that to be interesting when it comes to player evaluation. Daryl Morey, the former GM of the Sixers and Rockets, was pretty famously anti-comparison because he felt like it built in too much bias. But one of the things about talking to an experienced coach about comparison that immediately comes to mind is you've had enough instances in which evaluating on the basis of comparison has either worked out, meaning like they've met the expectation that the comparison set, or it didn't. The implication is that if you're still doing it, then more often than not, that comparison method has worked as opposed to falling short. Is that a fair assumption?
I think so. I think what we try to do and what I try to do with our staff is talk the same language. And, you know, I jokingly say you'll talk to guys or you'll look at notes and it's good speed. Well, what the heck does good speed mean? It's different for everybody. So we try to define that a little bit better. And I think for me, being able to picture either who a recruit or a prospect is now or what they can potentially be in the future is important. And so I'll often, you know, again, I use guys that I coached at Maryland or guys that we've played against. And it's like, okay, this guy is not Matt Rambo. I get that. But like his style, the way he plays, the way he would fit into what we're doing is Matt Rambo. You know, and so that's kind of how we use the comparison part of it. And then, frankly, as we get into this time of year, as we're trying to build our list and figure out guys, we actually start comparing guys to each other to some degree, because you got to make sure you have a good blend and balance of your class. And you start, it's not necessarily all attackmen one to whatever that we're ranking. It's this skill set, this guy's style, this the way this guy plays. And maybe there's five of those guys on the list that we're trying to compare against.
Your assistants, you've referred to we a few times, Luke Dupree, Zach Chandler, Chris Tillotson. Is that the staff coming back?
Unfortunately, no. Luke Dupree and Chris are coming back. Zach had an opportunity to go back and coach at Utah with Coach McMahon, where he played in his grad year. So we're pumped for him to be able to get back. We actually, Casey Capinos is coming on from Delaware.
That's right.
Yeah.
So... but I wanted to shout them out and call, and refer to them by name, because as you describe the notion of speaking the same language, one of the things that kind of suggests to me, or makes it's where my mind goes, is how you try to balance effectively having three assistants whose eyes you're feeling like you see through, meaning that like you're scaling yourself up to four people beyond just one. And in order to do that, you kind of have to train them, right, in order to see things the way that you see them or want to see them. But I also think that there's a tension there, because you also don't want to take away, first of all, you don't want to take away somebody's autonomy. And then second of all, you don't want to take away like their own point of view that made them special as players and coaches and was the reason that you wanted to be a part of your staff. How do you try to strike that balance in terms of training somebody to evaluate the way that you want them to versus keeping their own point of view and flair that makes them unique to who they are?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all a product of where we came from, whether that's as recruits, players, coaches, different programs we've come through, different influences. So to me, that's the spice of this whole thing that kind of blends it all together. I think for us, every guys are going to have their different perspective and what they value. And I'm certainly not trying to create robots by any stretch of the imagination. I think being able to have a conversation of why, you know, maybe Coach Dupree values this defenseman over another, or, hey, does this fit into what we're looking for? I think in that way, having everybody on the same page is important. But also, I mean, we have great discussions all the time. Like, I think it's important that we go in the same direction. How we maybe get to that final stage or how we get there, it should be different. And there should be valuing opinions and what guys tend to like better than another. You know, so I think there, yeah, I guess it's weird. You know, there's such an art to it and such a feel for it. And, you know, I think that's where each guy brings his own different views. And we'll sit, and we've done a bunch of meetings already, and we'll continue to do it up to September 9th of talking through players, talking through guys. Well, you know, I had this experience at a tournament and he was really good, or, oh, I rated him low, but man, it was pouring rain and I was in a bad mood that day. Okay. Well, like all of those factors come into play as we're looking through this.
You brought up something I want to dive in on a little bit. The experience that you gleaned, not necessarily just in this role, but in your prior roles dating back to your playing days. And I think, you know, certainly prior to joining the Holy Cross staff, you spent 6 years as an assistant at Maryland. And notably, you spent your college playing days at the Naval Academy. How do you describe how those two experiences inform, specifically because we're talking about recruiting, not just how you evaluate, but also how you do the other side of recruiting, which is relationship management, getting to know folks and ultimately selling your institution, given the fact that, you know, on the one hand, you know, Maryland is very much the pinnacle of the sport. And on the other hand, you know, getting recruited to play at the Naval Academy is about as unique of a recruiting journey as you can have, given that it carries with it, you know, a 5-year commitment post-college.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I would say with Maryland, and I tell this to our guys, I think when I got there for the 2014-2015 year, Maryland, I don't think, was quite Maryland. We was building to that, and Coach Tillman was doing an awesome job, but they weren't the household name that I think they are now. And, you know, so it was a little bit different than what people kind of see with the recency bias there, but still a great program, a destination place for lacrosse. And, you know, so I think,
sorry to interrupt there, yeah, but is the implication that you're making like everybody has to build? Nobody is born where they want to be. So that's what we're in now as a group wearing purple.
I think that's part of it. I think part of it is before 2017, Maryland was the team that couldn't make it, couldn't finish the deal. And I think after that, and after I left, frankly, it just continued to keep going and get better. You know, and credit Coach Tillman with all his work that he did there. I guess I just look at it like every place, I've had coaches and mentors that have said this, every place has its strengths and every place has its challenges and weaknesses and things that aren't quite as attractive. And I guess that's maybe the biggest experience I've taken, is finding what our niche is here at Holy Cross. You know, and figuring out what will attract guys and what's maybe not for guys, and figuring, you know, trying to weed through that part of it. I also was a late bloomer, you know, going through the process. I hurt my knee my sophomore year, playing football. And so didn't really have much of a year there. And, certainly was a completely different time recruiting wise. It was Locker Raven Summer League and top 205 back then. But I think I just kind of kept persistent and I worked through it and kind of developed and blossomed later in my career. And so I think I bring that. I have an eye towards those guys and maybe a soft spot towards some of those guys, you know, that I think is important. And frankly, I was told in the recruiting process by several schools, like, you're not good enough, this doesn't work. And that motivated me. And then I think the other side of it too is, like, I think there's a level of the way we go through this of trying to be candid and frank with prospects and their families on where we see them. But who am I to kill a kid's dreams and squash those? So I always try to leave a layer of hope and a door open, but I don't want them waiting around for us if they're kind of a little bit lower in what we evaluate right now.
You mentioned and set up the segue perfectly into talking a little bit more specifically about Holy Cross by mentioning that every place has its strengths and its challenges. So let's just start there. What are Holy Cross's strengths and challenges?
I think fantastic academic institution. You know, I think the there's something about the purple up here where people are passionate about and want to support each other. And the alumni connections and the network that our guys have is mind-blowing, frankly. You know, when I first got here, I think, you know, we had guys, a few guys on our team that were like in the 20s of family members that went to Holy Cross. And there's a lot of legacies. That's one of the things that surprised me. And to me, you're not sending your kids, grandkids, nieces, and nephews to a place you had a bad experience at. So I think that is our biggest strength, is the people are awesome. The experience is great. Fantastic education. You know, Worcester is an awesome city that's growing and developing, which is really cool. And we get to play in the Patriot League. And we compete at a very high level. And, you know, I think that's one of the things it was attracted to for me when I came up here. In terms of challenges, we're a small school, 3,000 students with 27 varsity sports. in a Division I level. I'm not sure there's another school in the country trying to do that. And so, you know, there's some resources that we have to share and things that we have to work through. You know, I think this is, could be a strength or a weakness, depends on how you want to look at it. But I think, you know, it's a challenging school to get into. Sorry to bring up any bad memories for you. You know, but yeah, I think
a little salt. Hey, I can just affirm it's not a bad memory. It's a confirmation.
You know, but I think being a challenging school, we got to pay attention in the recruiting process about academics and making sure guys understand that. And the other side of it is, when they get here, it's really hard. And it puts there's a lot of pressure on guys academically. And so we have to navigate through that as we go through their 4 years.
What is the lacrosse culture like?
I think, you know, we talk about, and I kind of riffed off of the Be the Best from Maryland. So I will give them credit for that. And, you know, we talk about an approach to excellence. And we try to approach every day with a positive mindset and optimistic. I believe however you approach something is how you're going to set yourself up for potential success, whether that's, setting yourself up as a defender and approaching the right way, or sometimes it gets chilly up here, Terry. There's no secrets in that. And, if it's chilly and you wake up and you got to go to class, and it's like, however you approach getting out of bed is going to help you to learn or not as well as you could that day. And then excellence, we just want to be the best at everything we're doing. And you know, I think and I say this to recruits all the time, again, whether we're on the field, we want to be the best there. If you're washing the dishes at home, we want those things to be as clean as they ever have been. Like, that to me is just excellence. And it's a mindset that we try to impart every day.
When I think about the best Holy Cross teams during my tenure at Inside Lacrosse, you know, I think about a handful of late bloomers from traditional powerhouses like Chaminade, some guys that were from the Boston area high school scene that wanted to stay home, and then a handful of non-hotbed kids who you hit on, right? Maybe they didn't necessarily, especially early in the process, get the love. And that was one of the reasons that, Holy Cross was there to find a home. How accurate is that? And how do you describe the way that informs and has continued to inform your approach in terms of, you know, putting together those target lists?
I think it's very accurate. I think there's some high schools that I think and places that are just naturally attracted to Holy Cross. Being a Jesuit school, I think those Jesuit high schools are kind of a natural fit in a lot of ways. And you referenced whether it's a Chaminade or a top tier program. I think what we've tried to find is the guys that have gotten hidden and, you know, you could say they're diamonds in the rough, but it's because they're the fourth attackman that are behind three guys going to top five schools. And so it's not that they're not good. They just happen to have a deep class that they were playing behind. So I think it's a blend of that. And then you mentioned it from the, guys from non-traditional areas. I think, you know, we have some guys and have historically had some guys that have had success that were, you know, like playing as eighth graders and one of the best players on their team then, that are great athletes. They understand how to be an alpha, but blending that with guys from really good programs that might not have played as much so that they can teach them the lacrosse side of it. And so there's a balance and a stitching together that we try to match. I think, listening to other of these podcasts, like, you know, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but I think there's a blend of lacrosse skill that may lack some athleticism and athletes that may lack a little bit of lacrosse skill. And you can't have one too much of one versus the other. But I think when you put all those together, that's where teams get really good.
So one of the things that I think you're well positioned to discuss is how I think there's effectively three points on the spectrum of this changing world of college athletics, whether it be opting in and roster caps, whether it be NIL and what that actually means in terms of providing any type of incentive outside of scholarships and tuition, and then 5-on-5 and what it means for the combination of having a roster of 5 class years or having to deal with your grads going elsewhere for their 5th year or being a place that accepts grad transfers and benefiting from getting 5th years from other programs. And so if effectively the three points on the spectrum are like all in, half in, or not in, right? And you know, and it's oversimplifying it. You know, there, but what's interesting is like there are a couple of teams in your league that I would characterize as half in. You know, which is to say, like, you know, not providing, like, they have opted in, one in particular, didn't and then did, so they don't have the benefit of the DSAs, but they do have a roster cap, but they're not going to be distributing Alston funds, so, and, you know, not, don't have a robust NIL platform. So, you know, that's, that creates a ecosystem that they're going to have to figure out how to navigate. You're also in a league with a bunch of the ones that are clearly not in, right? Like Army and Navy, chief among them. You're not going to well, it's very, very unlikely you're going to have grad students playing playing sports at either Army or Navy, and you are not going to have them getting paid anything other than their per diem or whatever it is that you get when you're serving as a student. Where do you go? Where do you fall?
Oh, geez. If I had to put us in a bin, I would probably say more on the not in category of some of those things. I think the other factor that seems to have been more prevalent now with COVID, and I think a lot of things converged around that time, is just the transfer situation in general. You know, might be the fourth leg of that stool to keep it sturdy there that we're kind of keeping an eye on. I think for us, you know, we're still, and I won't go out of my realm too much, but I feel like we're still kind of holding true here to the traditional point of college athletics, which is to give student athletes a great educational experience and a great athletic experience and set them up for a life of purpose after they graduate. You know, and I think for us, we're not opted in. We don't have grad school here. So Holy Cross is very prideful about being one of the few, if not the only, only undergraduate Jesuit institution in the country. It goes back to there are things that could make those weaknesses and challenges, and there's ways that there are strengths. I think, you know, there's peers I'm talking to sitting on the sidelines all summer that are trying to figure this whole thing out, and it changes all the time. We're pretty able to stay pretty true to who we are, and not necessarily worry about too much of that noise, which I think has been a huge benefit for us. You know, and even with the grad students, like, and we're starting to talk about it more and more with the age-based model, like, come here, dominate for 4 years, get a fantastic education, and then go somewhere else and get another extra education and go play a fifth year. Like, to me, that's a great opportunity for a young man to go through that way. So yeah, I don't know, kind of.
Have you had those conversations with some 27s?
We have not yet, frankly. You know, I think all of that,
I'd just be curious how they would respond. Like,
yeah, I think all of that.
I understand. Sorry to interrupt, but like, I understand how that would be really positive, right? Like, oh, I only have to compete with three years of players ahead of me, not four. And really it's more like 3.5, because, and this is kind of the hidden part of this, is that like, it's probably only going to be the contributors that come back after graduation. But what that means is that like, you're actually competing with like a higher talent quotient than you otherwise would. It's not the distributed talent quotient of an entire class that comes back. So again, like I can understand how that would be appealing, but I'm 40, right? And I don't think, you know, I don't know that a 16-year-old or a 15 or a 17-year-old is necessarily going to think about the benefits of that way.
Yeah, and all these rulings came out after we committed most, if not all, of our 27. So that part of the conversation wasn't happening. I anticipate this fall it's going to happen more with the 28s. And what that means for them. But the way I look at it, and we've talked to some of our guys that have recently graduated and want to try to take advantage of it, like, what a win-win. Go work to get a job, figure out what you want to do, and if either that doesn't work out or you have another opportunity, like, you're giving yourself options, which to me is what this is all about. And I think for us, and you kind of hit on it, what I think is a benefit for our young men is there's not as much variability or changes that are going to happen year to year in terms of a roster for us. We are able to take transfers. We do look in the portal. But I'm very confident in the guys that we recruited and we want to develop. So we're not going in there like crazy. We have two young men on campus that are starting the fall that are transfers. So it does happen, but not something that we're crazy about. So it's like, if you come in as a freshman, you're coming in with the guys that we think you're going to graduate with in 4 years to a large degree. We're not adding on top of guys here and there.
So just kind of continuing along on some of the ways in which things have changed in college athletics, there's, you know, two things that come to mind. The first is, you already mentioned the conversations that you're having on the sidelines with your peers who have to deal with it differently. But also, you know, I see the IMLCA logo on the wall behind you, and you have like an official position within the association that I know you care about. So this is a little bit of an aside or a sidebar to this conversation, because it's not germane or pertinent to necessarily like how you recruit at Holy Cross. It's more, like, how do you think about where this is going and what it means and what matters? How do you separate the signal from the noise, so to speak?
Oof. I think so. It's changing so much and so rapidly that in some cases it's hard to figure out what's signal and what's noise.
Just to give you an example, or to give our listeners an example to that, we're recording here on Friday afternoon, and I saw earlier today, about 2-3 hours ago, that the injunction that Judge Charlotte Sweeney initially granted in the, I believe it's pronounced Wisney case, W-I-S-N-E, has been stayed. Right. So, like, I mean, just from that standpoint, the hysteria, so to speak, that's been unleashed over the course of the last 3 weeks was nullified. And that is exactly how this whole thing has gone over the last 7 years.
Well, and I think that's kind of, I guess, in some ways, what I think is a strength for us. Like, it's my job as the head coach at Holy Cross and part of our profession as a coach to be aware of these things and what comes and goes. I think it's very fortunate for me. Like, that whole thing has been fun to watch on the sidelines, but has had zero impact on my life as it relates to being the head coach at Holy Cross. And so I think there's benefit there that we try not to get too distracted by some of that noise. But I do think it's important for us as coaches, going back to the IMLCA, to come together as an organization. And, much like we talked about our coaches in recruiting as a staff, like, coming from different perspectives, I think it's important for us to come at it at these, we'll call them issues, these things that are developing, from our own local perspective of how that impacts our programs. But I also think it's part of our organizational job to look at it from a global perspective. And what does this do for the sport of lacrosse? How is this impactful for the sport? And how is it furthering what I think our organization believes in, which is to bring young men and develop them and help them through the game of lacrosse to grow and be great guys. So I guess that's where I kind of see it, is we kind of have to be aware of it. I think it's important for us all to be informed and understand how some of these changes might change our landscape in lacrosse. And ultimately what I think most, if not all of us, want to do, which is to educate young men through the game.
A lot of meat on the bone there. And, you know, perhaps we can circle back depending on how the conversation unfolds. But, you know, one of the questions I've asked a little bit more frequently recently that I really like is, what is a visit to Holy Cross like? How do you try to structure the day, particularly over the course of September and October, you know, realizing you're going to start practicing here in the middle of September and run through late October, and looking back at the commitments of your recent classes. You know, it's not to say that you don't do any recruiting next summer, you know, for 28s, but it is to say that you do get a good number of commitments banked, so to speak, here over the course of the next 2 months.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, you've mentioned it to a couple other guests on the podcast how fast this thing is going. It just seems to get faster and faster every year. And I think that's something that I've had to adjust to. I guess it was maybe two cycles ago. I felt like we could get to know the young men, kind of see where the top 10 guys took recruits away and kind of eliminate that list part of it. Get to know the young men and then get to watch them in November to kind of confirm what we saw in the summer or see them with a new light of now getting to know them as people too and their families. It doesn't seem like that opportunity is presenting itself anymore. It just keeps getting faster and faster.
Just to put some numbers behind that, in the class of 25, the group that just finished their freshman year, yep, according to our database, you took two commitments in September and then, oh wait, you know what? No, because one of them was a September of 24. You took one commitment, yep, in September, one in October, and then eight after the first three weekends, yep, of November.
Yeah.
And then in the 27s, I don't know. I don't like counting on podcasts, but let's just say it was a lot faster.
It was much faster. No, and I will tell you that we still, you know, and I never feel like we're done, finished recruiting. The class is never closed necessarily, but I think we're in a good spot right now. And we had a few guys this summer that we took too, so it'll go out that far. But it just, most of it has been very early.
I did just count. So you took, yeah, eight before November 1st in the 27th.
Yeah.
So
it basically flipped. Time there, riffing,
yeah, so. I appreciate it. You vamped for me.
You know, and I think part of that is the staff. There hasn't been quite as much turnover and been more continuity. So I feel like we've been ahead of some of these evaluations better. And I feel like we're finally in a spot where we want to be in terms of evaluating and getting eyes on all these guys. To put us in a good position for September 9th and what happens. But to go back to the original question in terms of a visit, my goal in the whole process is to expose young men and their families to what we offer at Holy Cross, both lacrosse-wise and as an institution, to get them to make an informed decision. And I use that as the basis for how we do a visit. We don't typically, do visits around other athletic events or other events during a weekend, because that happens, what, six times a year,
right,
in certain cases. What really happens every day is the day to day of the middle of the week. So, we really emphasize that part of it and try to give them exposure, to some sort of lacrosse activity. Sometimes it's a lift, sometimes it's a practice, depends on the day. Some sort of academic class, because I think here, again, one of our strengths being all undergraduate is that the professors build relationships with the students and our class size is very small. And so I think that's a huge positive for us. And then get them around our guys is really the most important part. We actually had a family come up this summer who I think the dad was working when they came on the original visit and who wasn't able to come up. And then it worked out to get him on campus. And the young man was like, they ended up going on an admissions tour, which we typically don't do with recruits. And the young man was like, Coach, I saw more buildings in this tour than I saw my whole visit. But I think he played video games and saw some dorm rooms. So
right.
To me, that's a success because we want them to be around the guys. And I think that's ultimately the thing is exposing them to the great people that we have around campus and also in the department, because those are the ones day to day that you're going to be living with and working with.
And then as far as how you continue to track and communicate after getting a commitment, what is that like? How do you describe that?
Yeah, we try to stay in touch with guys and keep that relationship going. You know, I think the as we're getting better and better recruits and commitments, the knowledge of those can be taken and guys can look elsewhere is important for us. And I think a lot of it is, again, getting reminders of why they choose to come here and continuing to get to know them. And, you know, it's relatively easy in the spring because you're tracking their games and some of the things that they do there. But we just keep trying to feed them information, keep them connected to our team. You know, there's time to time where, you know, if we're going to a place where they're playing games, if we're playing a game where near their hometown, we try to get them over and so they can see that. Or, you know, I think it's just a consistent making sure we're building relationships and continuing those relationships and communicating with them.
And then lastly, just in terms of the kind of before they arrive on campus component of things, you mentioned how unique and special not having grad programs is with respect to the way in which small class sizes, developing relationships with professors, obviously the percentage of the student body that is athletes, which I would imagine also creates a welcoming environment for athletes. What do most of your kids study? And what are the available options for the ones that don't want to major in business?
Yeah, most economics is what most of our guys are in. And I'll throw another number at you. 25% of the student population are athletes at Holy Cross, which brings up is a huge part of campus, which is pretty cool. But most of our guys study economics. I think, again, for me, one of the things that I think is a benefit is guys don't apply to a major here or a school within the school. You just apply to Holy Cross. And you don't declare your major until sophomore year, typically. And what that allows is guys to be able to look at different things and get exposed to different paths, so to speak. And so I would say, but most of our guys settle in on economics. And a lot of our guys are double majoring or minoring as well. So a lot of econ and math or... you know, sometimes it's econ and a foreign language, those kinds of things.
Got it. So as we, you know, kind of bring this conversation in for a landing, how do you spin it forward? I mean, we've talked about it in the context of like the changing world of college athletics and a little bit in the lens of what that creates opportunity wise for Holy Cross. But, you know, now as you have, you mentioned the staff continuity, and your own kind of evolved experience and maybe like having settled out a little bit, so to speak, you know, coming off of a 6-8 season, how do you feel like this thing is building and where you're pointed and how recruiting is, you know, as so many people say, the lifeblood of the future success, kind of funneling into future wins?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've, you know, one of the things that was exciting about last year, Terry, is we were able to see progress in terms of our record on a website. We've made progress every year that I've been here. It just unfortunately hasn't shown up to all the outsiders that pay attention to games on Saturday. So that part of it has been exciting. It's been a slow build, but a steady build and a steady climb for us, which is exciting. And, you know, as I see it, my job is, and our staff's job is to recruit a more talented 2028 class than we're bringing in 2027. And I think the other part of it that is really big, and we just didn't hit on it today, is like the other huge side of that is to develop the classes prior so that they're better in May than they were in September when they arrived in the door. And they're better as juniors than they were as sophomores. And then, you know, it's a rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing. Like, then we just keep getting better. And I feel like we're in a really good spot to do that. You know, we compete in a really, really, really challenging league, you know, and we're going to get there. I think for us, and we look at it and we're going through it now, like, it's our job to look at the top guys in the country. I don't think we want to waste a lot of time on some of those guys, but it's important to reach out to them and see where they are. And if we can get one or two of those guys, it really changes things. And I think that's where we look. And then trying to it's about finding the guys that are right for us. And I know a lot of coaches have said that on this podcast, but delving into maybe a little bit of helping families and prospects through this process, like, it's important to understand what you're getting into and be really honest with yourself about if you want it. And I don't sell anything. I believe in Holy Cross, you know, and we just try to expose everybody to what we can offer. For some, it's not for them. That's okay. For the guys it's for, they've had a great journey, and we'll continue to do that and continue to climb.
Should I ask about Bill Simmons, most famous Holy Cross alum in the sports media ecosystem? Not only him, but all of his friends.
Yeah, Bill Simmons came back. They dedicated the basketball court to Bob Cousy this past winter, so he was back and part of that celebration. So it was good to get him back on campus. So I'm sad to say I haven't had much interaction with him directly, but I know the folks that were involved in that event were pumped to get him back.
Rock on. Well, JL, I really appreciate your time on the podcast. Always appreciate the insight into how recruiting works, and can't wait to see the Crusaders hit the field this fall and next spring.
Thanks so much, Terry. I appreciate it. Thanks for everything you do for our sport.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.